And talking about aviation, this was the dinner speaker at the Academy, Lord May.
I want to talk tonight just a little bit about some of the aspects of our seeming inability to recognise the seriousness of things. And I'll now tell you my one joke. There's about two people on an aeroplane. If it were told in Britain, they'd be either Irish or Polish. If it were told in Canada, they'd be from Newfoundland. And I guess in Australia, they'd be New Zealanders. But anyhow, they're going along, and it's a four-engine plane, and one of the engines, one bloke looks out and sees the engine's on fire, but over the announcement comes the pilot says, not to worry, putting the fire out. We fly perfectly well on three engines. We'll just be about half an hour late. A little bit later, second engine goes. Pilot says, not to worry, two engines, more than adequate. We get by on one, we'd be about an hour late. Third engine goes. And one of the blokes says to the other, this is getting serious. If the fourth engine goes, we're going to be really late and I'm going to miss my connection. It is a wonderful summary of our tendency to believe the future is a gradual extrapolation of the present.
Bob May, Lord May of Oxford at the Academy of Science.
Hey, it's hot in here! 32% more carbon in the atmosphere! Owie, owie, owie! Ice, ice, ice! Raising sea levels twice by twice!
We're scientists!
Yes, they're climate scientists, but plenty who pronounce on the subject are not. And a new book launched this week by Bob Carr, former Premier of New South Wales, tackles all the standard lines denying the science. It's called Climate Change Denial, Heads in the Sand, by Hayden Washington and John Cook. And soon every federal politician will have one. John Cook has been sorting the arguments via his website.
Well, I guess building a database of it, it's like putting a puzzle together. And so once I had been doing that for several years, I could see all the patterns. And I guess the one common pattern is it's about denying the evidence. And then you could just start to see the different techniques that they use. So cherry picking is one technique, or conspiracy theories, which is just another way of avoiding the evidence altogether.
And was it at all affected by any evidence that came out? For instance, when we're talking about the East Anglia email scandal, there were three, possibly four inquiries, and each one found in favour of the scientists in terms of the scientific evidence, but that seems not to have stopped denying at all.
Yeah, well, there's actually been eight independent investigations into it, and they've all found the same result. So it's almost like climate science, where we have multiple lines of evidence finding the same conclusion. But conspiracy theories are very popular amongst any group that wants to deny a scientific consensus.
So you're saying that rule one, let no level of evidence influence what you're saying?
Well, if you can get away from talking about the evidence, then I guess it's a lot easier to deny the scientific consensus.
So you're giving me some of the ideas. There's the cherry picking, and they're suggesting that temperatures have in fact not gone up since 1998. What else?
I guess another popular tactic is using fake experts. And the most popular version of that is this petition project from the States, where they list 31,000 names, which they say are scientists that are sceptical of global warming.
Yes, I've seen that many, many times, where 31,000 scientists have been said to come out and say that they disapprove exactly of what?
Well, the actual statement that they sign their name to is generally that human activity can't cause climate disruption. And in fact, CO2 is a good thing, you know, that something to that effect. But when you look at all the names on the list, about 99.9% of them are not climate scientists. So it's this raising of fake experts. And that tactic's been used way back to the 70s, where the tobacco industry, they had this Operation White Coat. They would have these scientists come out and say, there's no link between smoking and cancer. In fact, there's even sometimes the same scientists who are saying the same thing now. There's no link between pollution and global warming.
Who are these scientists nonetheless? Are they scientists?
Most of them probably are scientists. There's a few funny names there. I think Posh Spice might have been on there or somebody. But what they are mechanical engineers, medical doctors. And the point is, when you have a technical, complicated subject like climate change, you want to get the opinions of climate experts. So, for example, if you were going to get a heart operation, you wouldn't want a mechanical engineer cutting into you. You'd want someone who was an expert on it.
And did you ask yourself why they were signing in the first place?
Yes, well, that was a major theme of our book. Like, I looked into how the tactics and how they mislead, and Hayden's primary contribution to the book was looking into why these people were denying.
Perfect cue for Hayden. Why is it happening now?
Well, I mean, that's the $64,000 question that fascinated us, that the science is getting more and more certain. So this is where you've got to look at what denial is, and in terms of the fact that it's very common. Skepticism is almost the opposite of denial. All scientists should be skeptical, but skepticism is a search for the truth. If you look at the actual definition, denial is hiding from the truth and running away from it. So people who actually say they're skeptics on climate change, in fact, mostly they're not. We should all scientists should be skeptical. In fact, they're denying it because it's what they want to believe. And it's this useful definition is to split it up into three sorts of denial: literal denial, which is like your denial industry funded by fossil fuel companies, and there's lots of people who've written about that. Then there's interpretive denial, which is what we know better as spin, which governments tend to use, where much the same as you talk about collateral damage instead of massacring civilians. And then there's what we became most fascinated with, or I did as writing this section, is implicatory denial, which is the denial. Something makes us afraid. If it conflicts with our self-image, we have the ability to flick a switch in our brains and deny it. And that's why the science is getting more and more certain, but we've dropped at least 20% in Australia in terms of the people who believe climate change is real.
And it's so tease that out. Yeah. What you're saying is that we like our life. Mm. What is being said by the scientists is certainly inconvenient. It means a profound change to the way we do many things. We don't like it, so it's not on.
Yeah. As far as we know, well, maybe chimpanzees deny things too, because they carry around dead infants, which is probably a bit of case of denial, was pointed out to me. But denial is a delusion. Now, what we're sort of pointing out here is when it's actually threatening the ecosystems upon which our society relies and our whole civilization, it's actually become a pathology.
On the other hand, from my point of view, having done thousands of interviews on this subject, if someone is conscientious, he or she can look up the evidence, as you have in this book, meticulously, and to deny it amounts, does it not, Hayden, to lying?
Well, it's a delusion, so it's a lie in regard to reality. Yes, it's hiding from reality. And, you know, one of the chapters asks, do we let denial prosper? And we look at various things within, like the fear of change, the failure in values, its ignorance of ecology, gambling in the future. The media itself, you know, has what's been called balances bias, where you have all the scientists, climate scientists of the world on one side and someone from a right-wing think tank who's into denial given equal prominence.
We have to avoid groupthink.
You know, media loves controversy, and of course most of the media is owned by conservative interests also, and Naomi Oreskes has shown very convincingly through a great deal of research that there is an ideological bent where conservatives believe the market represents liberty, and if you were going to regulate the market due to climate change to try and fix things, you're attacking liberty, and therefore these people are opposing denial. So all these things are involved. So the answer is yes, we do let denial prosper, and we have a couple of chapters talking about how we roll back denial. But I think the key part is to recognise that there is denial, and it's a major problem stopping us from solving one of the world's greatest issues.
Well, Naomi Oreskes, of course, has written the introduction to your book, yeah. And she's on The Science Show on the 8th of January, and she's coming back for Sydney Writers' Week, funnily enough, in a few days' time. But, John, how many scientists who are working in the field of some standing have you found who are making a genuine critique of some aspect, important aspect, of the accepted climate science?
I could probably count them on both my hands, I guess. Maybe a half dozen or so scientists that actually publish papers that be skeptical that like global warming will be bad in the future. Generally, among scientists, even skeptic scientists, there's very little dispute that human activity and carbon dioxide is causing warming.
Well, I know that there are one or two in the United States, and I've corresponded with them, who are concerned perhaps to criticise the rate of change, the effect of CO2, and detail like that. But very few that I can think of any standing who are saying that the whole thing ain't on.
No, I think the general sticking point among sceptic qualified scientists is they tend to hang their hat on this proposition that negative feedback will kind of cancel out of the warming that we cause. It's like a get-out-of-jail-free card. But the main argument against that is when we look back through Earth's history, that's never happened before. There's always been positive feedbacks that have amplified warming.
And what about the CO2 will have a diminishing effect at higher levels?
Well, it does. Like, that's not disputed, and that's taken into account in all the models and all the calculations. There's two really important things to point out about that. One is that we measure the actual effect from CO2, so satellites and planes observe the heat coming from the Earth and escaping out to space. So they can compare what we simulate or what we expect with what's actually happening. So observations show that CO2 is causing warming. And I think the whole diminishing CO2 effect, that's something you read on the internet, but there's no actual genuine scientists that would make that argument.
Then, of course, there's the argument about computers and modelling, and it's very interesting to see a film that was made by the new president of the Royal Society of London, Sir Paul Nurse, who actually began his term in office by doing a film for the BBC, taking on the deniers, and he went to see one of the main people from the Spectator magazine and bailed him up, and also went to a fascinating place where they're actually showing climate models in action. You know, you've got a screen above and a screen below. One is the model showing the weather patterns live, streaming out according to the model, and the other one is the actual weather being shown from a satellite, and they're exactly the same. Mm. It's quite remarkable. Now, the models, I think, have been portrayed as being unsophisticated and bodgy and, you know, computer crunching in fantasy land. In fact, they're unbelievably exact, aren't they?
Well, the models are getting more and more sophisticated, and they can calculate the whole global trend quite accurately. And now they're getting better and better at working out regional trends as well, which is where they get useful, because then different areas can work out how climate change is going to affect them. But it's also important to realise that the case for global warming isn't purely based on models. It's also based on many lines of evidence. That's the evidence that climate deniers are trying to deny, that by focusing an attack on models, trying to deflect attention away from all the evidence that we have.
Hayden, there's been a trend, has there not, as the science has become more and more powerful, for some elements, for instance Bjorn Lomborg, the sceptical environmentalist, to say that, well, yes, it's happening, but suggesting adaptation is more important than doing what's mainstream.
An interesting phenomenon, what they call non-denial denial. So you get people who are saying, yes, we accept climate change is happening. However, when we look at all the things we should be solving around the world, whether it's malaria or HIV, or this suggestion that you're going to focus with adaptation, well, if you're living in Bangladesh, where 20% of the population could go under with a metre or 2 metre sea level rise, then they're not going to be able to adapt very effectively. Or if you're looking at 35% of the world's species probably being in danger of extinction, then, or if, as James Hansen's pointed out, to talk with 16 of the world's major cities on sea level, to talk about adapting to what could be a 5 metre sea level rise in the next couple of centuries is insanity, because you can't adapt to that. It is economically a huge impost we are talking about. So yes, it is easy to talk about adaptation, but it's a way of allowing business as usual to continue for as long as possible.
So you're suggesting they're adapting their argument to have the same effect but differently?
In the face of this overwhelming scientific evidence, you don't actually try and deny any longer that climate change is happening. What you try and do is sort of say, yes, it's happening, but unfortunately it's uneconomic for us to do anything about it.
And you shouldn't be alarmist because it's not going to be as bad as you think.
Yeah, well, that's the other side of it, that yes, possibly we can adapt because humans are adaptable. But of course, we've evolved, our civilization evolved in 8,000 years of a stable climate, so we've never had to adapt to a rapidly changing climate.
I want you to make a value judgment now, Hayden, of the ones you've looked through with those sorts of social trends you've been examining. How many of the people you're talking about are doing so out of goodwill, and how many do you think are doing something of a put-up job?
Yeah, well, it's a fascinating question. I mean, you know, when you read some of these books, you keep asking yourself, some of these denial books, is this person for real, or are they actually doing it deliberately to try and confuse the issue? And I think it's interesting that Naomi Oreskes in a book looks at this same thing to try and ask herself, what's going on? Is it actually that these people are being bought out by big money, or do they actually believe it? And I think probably a lot of them actually do believe it, that it is an ideologically driven belief that they think they're actually doing the right thing rather than... I think there are also some people who are in the denial industry who know very well that they're doing it because they want to keep reaping massive profits out of fossil fuels for as long as they can.
John, what's going to happen to your book? Is it going to politicians and so on?
Yes, we're printing a special parliamentarian copy, which will have a statement in the front of the book, which has been signed by John Hewson and Bob Carr and seven climate scientists. And we're sending that to every federal member in Canberra.
Will you give a personal one to Nick Minchin?
I'll be happy to sign a copy for him, yes.
Because he used to be a Minister for Science, and he says the arguments about climate change are wrong.
Well, clearly, those who are really strongly in denial, who know the truth, are not going to get much out of a book. They're not going to believe it. They're not going to question their own denial. We're really writing for those people who are not that far gone, that they are generally confused about what's going on. Because if you're not a scientist who's done a lot of research on this, if you look at the media, you could be forgiven for thinking that it was 50-50 in the scientific community in regard to whether climate change is happening, rather than 97.5% amongst practicing climate scientists and every academy of science in the world believing that human-caused climate change is real. So, yes, obviously not everyone is going to realise that they're in denial, but there are a lot of people generally out there who are confused and trying to make headway. And I think what needs to be pointed out is this trade area is tremendously at risk. I know a lot of climate scientists are depressed about is that the scope of the impacts that are going to occur is far greater than the cost of doing something about it.
Hayden Washington with John Cook. Their book is Climate Change Denial, and it's very readable and a handy reference to look up debating points and facts. Launched this week by Bob Carr. John Cook's website, by the way, is skepticalscience.com. That's with a K.